I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass, as well as answering your questions at home. Each week we take a look at the latest news, maybe break down some tones, and all to give you the lowdown on the low end. This week we are lucky, I guess, to be joined by the wonderful returning guest. It's Matt Parker.
Yeah.
Crowd goes pause for a pause.
No one else was available. Yay! Yeah.
It was a very short notice.
Filler episode. Matt, our dear friend, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks.
How the devil are you, sir?
Oh, I'm just wonderful, thank you. I've just come off a string of a lot of gigs and now I've got wrist pain. So I'm looking forward to not having anything again till Saturday.
How is that you? What you call them, gigs?
Yeah, gigs. They weren't. Johnny, don't buy there was no that. Music don't. Involved. It was just OnlyFans gigs.
I like them silent.
It was like an old black and white film.
How are you guys? How many times have you thought about the Roman Empire this week?
I'm thinking about it right now. My mind is just drifting towards Memento Mori constantly.
God, I hate that meme so much, but I can't stop laughing. Oh,
I feel like we might struggle to get out.
I know. I really do feel like every man has just gone, like, collectively. If I am asked about the Roman Empire, I will say I think about it every day. Like, it's like as a species, we all just went, "Yep, Roman Empire every day."
So I'm in the opposite field where, I was surprised by this. Like, sorry, what? I probably haven't thought about this since I had to in school.
I'm in a Facebook group and I've been in it for a long time, and it's like we pretend the internet is the modern Roman Empire or something like that. It's just everything is just like everything is in like shit Latin, or like everything is Roman Empire memes.
And it's, how has this taken this long to come out?
We've all been.
And more importantly, can you invite us to it?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to be involved. You know.
Yeah, Johnny, you're either into it or you're not, Johnny.
Oh, I'm into it. I've just joined a Facebook page today, which is literally called Pedal Boards for Dickheads. And I'm like, it's so good.
I joined it today and there's one member.
It's no, the first post is this guitarist who's clearly playing a bar gig, and he's got like one of those like triple satellite John Mayer, like John Frusciante, like mental pedal boards, and he's like playing in a pub. Yeah, he's got like three huge like Pedal Train Pros, and there's something like 30 drive pedals. It's absolutely brilliant.
Well, you never know what kind of room you're going to be in, you know, what kind of vibe and sound you're going to need.
What era of Tube Screamer do I want tonight?
What I've got my Wazza Craft.
Yeah. I've got the Wazza Craft and the retail model, yeah, just in case. You know,
shout
don't
out
want to spoil the crowd.
Bloody hell! Well, we could be all day just talking the shit,
talking about Wazzas all day.
Wazza Craft pod coming soon. On this podcast, we like to answer your listener questions. If you at home, I have to point out the camera, not at my face. If you at home want to ask questions on this podcast, you need to go over to Instagram and follow us at In The Pocket Pod. We will put up a post on there, share who the guest is going to be, and yeah, like the lovely people did today, you can comment down below and we'll ask the questions and form it all together. We do store your questions, so if your question doesn't get asked, don't worry, it might get answered down the line. So yeah, In The Pocket Pod on Instagram. Chris, what is our first question?
That was smooth. It's also not smooth when I highlight how smooth it was.
The best jokes are the ones you have to explain, you know?
Absolutely. Matt, it should come as no surprise that this question is, of course, aimed at you. Question one. Dim the lights. How far do you go with modding bases?
Well, I feel like this is...
Very.
Yeah, there's just no going around it. Like, I used to run a guitar teching business before I do what I do now, essentially. So I will do pretty much most mods myself, from just like a nut to refinishing a bass or guitar. I recently just changed the neck on my Bits of Jazz. So it had a 71 American Jazz neck on it. And I've just put a Vintera 50s P neck on it. But yeah, I'll do pickup rewiring, you know, whatever, really change things from active to passive or back again. And I'm pretty happy to do refins and all kinds of weird shit. Fret levels, refret, doesn't really bother me. So I'll mod anything. I am cognizant to vintage stuff. I have a cutoff point of 1980 for modding anything vintage, because the 80s kind of, like, it is obviously old now, but it doesn't have the same kind of value as something like a pre-CBS Fender or like even like a 70s one. Like, you can still get a cheap 80s Fender, really. So I don't typically tend to mod things that are irreversible after that point. And if I do mod anything, I make sure that I keep everything somewhere safe so that I can like move it back if I'm ever going to flip it. But yeah, I'm kind of happy to mod anything, really. A modern bass, literally, machine heads, bridge, probably immediate upgrades unless they're like pretty good, or hip shot or something, or Goto beforehand. But yeah, I'm happy to mod anything, really. I'll definitely give it a go.
Modern bass, it's got mod in the name, you know. It's just
absolutely
that's it.
Especially when you can get like such good stuff at such low price now, that it's just like great foundations, you know, prime for modding. There's it's quite a good skill set to have now, because you can get, you know, so much out of the money.
I think you and I were saying this, weren't we, with like the Glary and stuff that, like, last time we were together. It's hard to buy a intrinsically bad instrument now. Like, even that at 80 quid was playable out of the box. So,
oh,
like,
it's still playable now. Like, I've had it around for weeks and it is so good. I pick it up all the time because it's very light as well. I'll just pick it up and play it, and it still feels great. Like, it's really good. And modding that, brilliant. You know?
It's crazy. So, like, I remember even, like, when I guess we would have been coming up, like, I got my first guitar when I was 8, and I remember, like, my dad taking me to the shop and being like, we need to try a few because some will be bad. And his experience has always been that, like, my dad's born in the like mid-60s, like, obviously started playing guitar kind of probably in the 80s. And then he was like, most guitars in the 80s are bad, unless you're buying like a full fat Fender or like a JV Squire, which is what he ended up with. But, you know, he was like, everything is bad, basically. And like, you see these like lawsuit era things now, and there's some really good ones, like Grecos and like Shaftesbury's and stuff, which are great instruments, and like Bernie's and stuff. But then you had like just like, you know, random no name bolt on neck Les Paul stuff with like abysmal fretwork and neck gaps and like just, you know, bad instruments intrinsically. Yeah. And you just don't get that anymore. CNC has made a huge difference. Like, CNC just has made sure that everything is a tight tolerance now. So like, as long as the original CAD file is correct, basically everything gets made the same, doesn't it? So like, like Squire is a great example. Squires, since probably 2010, I think have been just excellent instruments. Like, your 40th anniversary P that you had was so good. And like, you know, if you bought that for whatever they, you can get them on Thomann at the minute for like 230 quid or something crazy.
It's crazy.
Insane, isn't it?
They're low in stock, and I don't know why they're going for so cheap. I mean, I guess they want to shift them, but like,
it's mad. I'm so tempted to buy one, because for 230 quid you'll not get a better bass. And that, so if you bought that, you put some good tuners on it, you put a good bridge, and you change the electronics out, you'd probably be in for what, say, 450, 500 quid. So you'd be in the cost of a secondhand Mexi Fender, but you'd have like...
And would you keep the pickup the same?
The pickup in it is really good, actually. Like, it's a good pickup. But for the sake of argument, let's say that we're changing the pickup out as well. So you could be in it for 500 quid, and you could be in it for like an exceptional instrument at that point, because the wood is the wood. That's not changed. The necks feel great on them. the finish is nice, they look good. You know, you could change all the electronics and hardware out of it, and suddenly, you know, you've got like an absolute beater of a bass that, you know, you can go and gig and record with, and you're in it for 500 quid.
You're
absolutely right. I mean, I was just thinking about my that classic vibe that, granted, has been sat in the case for quite a while. I should probably do something with it. I got that second hand off a friend for 75 quid. I mean, I'm going to put a very big caveat in, and I'll explain why. It has currently got EMG pickups in it, but which are probably worth about five times the amount that I got for the bass. But they're going, and I'm going to put like some more like authentic passive like standard Fender Jazz pickups in there. But even before I upgraded the pickups, I always thought it was a really good sounding bass, and it used to be like my jam night bass, so I'm used to lots of people grabbing hold of it and using it. And more often than not, you'd get it back and someone would go, that's a really solid bass, that, for a Squire.
Mm.
And it's because it's, I mean, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, Matt. We think it might be like, what, 2012?
Yeah, I think we ran it, didn't we? That's when it came out, around about then, didn't they? I think the
yeah, but I don't know how old that one is. I just know when the classic Vibe range showed up. But you are absolutely right about things like, even excluding Squire, you've got obviously like a little bit more expensive, but like Sire, and then you've got all the Harley Bentons. The new Ashdown basses are in a really low price range.
They are going to kick the fuck out of anything in that price point. I say that as an Ashdown artist. They are going to kill everything at that price point. I've played all of the new ones, and they are insane.
Yeah, spoiler alert for the video I've got coming out.
Yeah. The neck profile on them is like a perfect, like, modern-ish J feeling neck to me. It's like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I thought you were going to say P then, because I think they're quite rounded, so they fit really nicely in the hand, but they're not a huge nut width.
No, so they're a 38mm nut width, which is jazz, and then they've got like a really... They're quite deep front to back, but they're like a really round profile, and they're almost like... They are, as far as I know, a C shape, but they almost feel like a U shape, like in that they've got this, like, they feel like a 70s jazz neck, but they're roasted as well, so they feel so good. Yeah. And like, ooh, that is the kind of jazz neck that I actually can play. Like, I know I've spoken to both of you about this, but I get like bad wrist issues. And if something's deep enough front to back, I can play it like at a 38mm nut width. And I played them all day and I was just like, this is the one, this is the one. And they just feel rock solid as well. You know what I mean? Like, they just feel good. They sound great in a live room, which is where I was playing them. Like, I was just super, super impressed with them. The finishes are nice as well.
Yeah, that always helps. That always helps. Yeah,
it does.
100%. I've got the roasted range here, apart from the short scale. And yeah, I'm definitely going to talk to them about buying one of these off them, because they're just phenomenal. And for the price, it's like insane.
Yeah, the Saint PJ as well was like a really good all rounder. The pink one that you've got, I played that as well, and that was just,
it sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, I know, doesn't it? The P pickup in that, especially for me, is like the real winner in that one. Like, it just sounds like so meaty, for lack of a better word. Like, it's so punchy. Like, in a live room, it was just like blowing me away. I was like, oh, this is such an articulate P, because sometimes I think they can just be like a bit overpowering mids and then not much else going on. But
do you know what the weird thing I got when I played it, and this was through the HX Stomp, which my classic go-to for all demos is Galleon Kruger head, Ampeg SVT 8x10 cab sim. The feeling I got is, I was like, oh, this sounds like an Ashdown amp, this sounds tubey, this sounds full. And it was just from the bass, you know, and even from the DI, I was like, this sounds really rich and full. And it gave me that Ashdown feel. And I was like, wow, I've got this just from this pickups on this bass. Like, really, really cool. So
it's just a really dynamic sounding bass. Yeah, it's so weird. It's really dynamic. And I don't know if you've noticed this, you probably would have, having played them, but like, acoustically, they sound really nice. Like, they just sound like really kind of like harmonically rich. And in particular, the Lowrider just sounds so spanky unplugged. Like, I picked that one up out of again, when I was up there, I had like, you know, the rack, and I was just like picking them up, playing them, putting it down and getting another one. And I picked that one up and I was like, boom, just slapped it. And I was like, whoa, this thing sounds so bright unplugged. It just sounds like so spanky. And
in fact, that's how I'm going to choose to play them from now on. I'm not going to plug in microphone to the bass. That's all you need. You know, I'm a real purist. I don't want that DI tone. Pfft, yeah, please.
You just want analog room. Analog room sound.
Further now.
On that organic string sound. Nice. Yeah. I mean, back to modding. What, Chris? You've got some mods on your base. How far do you think you'd take it with a mod project, or how far have you gone?
I've not gone any further ever than changing pickups, and I haven't done that. It's gone to someone to change them. I mean, I suppose the most modifications I've ever done is I've changed the strings. That's probably the furthest I've ever gone with kind of like mods and stuff. I've noticed with what bass was it? With the Godan was like the first bass I ever like adjusted the action myself. So like, I'm not a DIY guy, you know, in terms of like, I can change this, I can change that. I need to, because it's important to know these things, but especially in terms of modding, like, I would like to, I was going to do a little bit of a mini mod project with my Aerodyne and take the pickups out, because I don't want the pickups anymore. And then it's got a Badass 2 bridge on it, or is it a high mass bridge? It's a high mass bridge, which is what it came with. And I've not played it enough to decide whether I like that or not. Maybe that needs to change. Tuners, they're all things that I need to have a look at and decide, but it's a bit of a Frankenstein-y kind of bass, but yeah.
If they're original, I think the Aerodynes come with GoTo tuners, so I'd probably leave them on there.
All of the things you mentioned though are mods, changing the strings, changing, you know, all those things can
if you've got a bass that comes with your classic like 45 to 105 and you're like, oh, I want to try 100, or I want to try this and up the gauge a little bit and put those are they called beefy slinkies or power slinkies, the what slightly one up ones.
I have no idea about any of the Ernie Ball range, but it's a really...
No, me neither. They were just the first name that popped to mind, but that is technically a mod. It's just not a... Oh, yeah, so I've put an Evertune in. It's not like the same. It is still a mod, but it's just a significantly more simple mod.
Go on, Matt, you make another point.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that actually as well, like, the strings are the first thing you typically interface with when you're playing. So, like, if you went from, say, like, rounds to flats... That's a really noticeable mod. You know, you might have to do a little bit of like a relief setup, or, you know, change the saddle's height a little bit. But if you want to change the feel and the tone for £40, it's the cheapest mod you can do, probably, realistically, right? That's going to be a performance mod, not like a pick guard or something. But that'll massively change the intrinsic nature of the sound and feel of your instrument.
Yeah,
100%.
Or it's going to go all the way then and go, if you buy a different pick... For 65p, you'll find a difference in mid-range when you go from the 70mm to the 90.
Well, you know, shut that does up, make Chris. A difference. Even what Phil was saying about like him holding his pick different on a different way around, yeah, you know, it can yeah. change.
Well, that's a feel thing for me. I really don't think I've ever. I mean, maybe I should give it a go. Like, record a little bit of a 1mm, and then record again with a 0.6. I don't know if there's a sound difference, but there's definitely a feel difference.
Oh, for sure.
I can't play.
When you said
it.
About,
sorry,
Matt. When you said about pick guards, that is my guilty pleasure go-to mod. Like, it's such an easy thing to do, but can totally transform a bass, breathe new life into a bass as well. Like, if you've got a bass that you're just getting a bit bored of, have a think about, oh well, how can I visually make myself a bit more interested in this? And just change it up, you know.
I'll go one further. Don't buy a new pick guard, just take it off for a bit.
That's my
little secret sauce hack. If you take the pick guard off, and provided all the pickups and everything aren't like connected to it, exposed. And you can still use the bass,
if
you feel
like
you've got a new bass for a few weeks, it's sick.
I love pick guard.
Like your Godan, you know, looks sick without it.
Yeah, I really do prefer the Godan without the pick guard, because it's like, it looks, the wood's really good, it's got a nice grain to it, so I'm like, yeah. I'm going to have this naked.
That's how I feel about my Bitzer, like, Honey Jazz. Because, like, that
one
with...
I still want
to see it. Oh, I'll just grab it.
I want to see it without the pickguard, man.
I can take it off quickly, I think. Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh. Live on air. Oh. If you're not watching the video version of this, head over to YouTube.
That would be really cool without the pickguard.
Have you not seen a photo of it? I've definitely said
no. We did, but it had the old neck on it. Now with the roasted maple neck, I was like, oh shit! Like now I want to see it.
I can do this live on air if you give.
You've
me
got to post a picture of it, man.
30 seconds. Cool. Because I've only got 2 screws.
Whilst you do that, my modding knowledge kind of stops a little bit in electronics. I'll hold my hands up. I'm crap with that kind of thing. I've got a guy, and I don't mind throwing a guy I know and like, you know, a bit of cash to do some work for me, and just for a catch up, you know, that's fine by me. But it's my problem is that every base I mod, I end up some reason not enjoying down the line, and I don't know why. And then I get it in my mind that, oh, if I feel like I've got to mod this, then I'm not going to like it and all this. Mm. And it's this weird state of mind that I find myself in.
So you try a bass and you're like, oh, that's so much better.
Look
that's
at that.
So much better.
See, yes, I like this one with the black because I like that the if you look at the machined bushings, they're black. And then, yeah, I don't know. I'll keep it off for a bit, though. I just
looks
love
cool,
the, look at that.
You need
like
to, you should do
flame cash.
Do an on or off post, you know, see if people want to do that. I forgot to say at the start, and we'll do it at the end. If you guys want to go and check out Matt, if that is your name, go and check him out on Instagram at Matt Parker Bass. That is it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one, baby. Awesome content on modding this. You know, you had a reel recently which is doing really, really well, nearing 60,000 views on modding, you know, on modding that bass there
on that bass
about.
Yeah, that was the Vintera neck one. So just running people, if you've never changed the neck, it is pretty easy. It's about an hour all in, and that's if you're like semi competent with just hand tools. So yeah, it's not a big job. What I will say is that you probably are going to have to do quite intensive setup once you put a new neck on, just because everything will have been for your old neck. It might have a different radius of the fretboard and stuff like that. So you will have to know how to do a setup. But that's probably going to be in the next video I'm going to do, actually. Just run people through how to do a setup with like basic tools. Like, no, because like I've got like radius gauges and stuff, obviously, to do like proper setups. But like there are ways you can do setups without needing that. Like, you know, if you're happy with as low as you can go without it buzzing, then like I can run you through how to set up something without any of the tools. So I think that's going to be in the next video, just using the same bass again, just being like, look, here's what you need to do. I'll raise the action as high as I can get it, and then we'll take it low and figure out how to do it.
Super valuable knowledge for everyone, so definitely can follow Matt. So you are check that out, coming soon. There was one more thing I was going to say about modding. I think it's just try something new. Do what you can yourself, and then if you need to get someone else's advice in, always do it. You know, you don't want to do more damage to an instrument or end up ruining something for yourself. So I think don't be afraid to reach out and get advice and help from other people when you're doing it. So yeah, lovely. Shall we, gentlemen, move on to our next audience submitted question?
I think we should. I always miss the interludes. I keep thinking the interlude's going to kick in and it's not, but...
Dance time! Yeah.
Dance, monkey, dance. Question 2. Bit of a long one, this, so hopefully I nail it in the first take. We'll see. This is obviously for you, Matt. Would be funny if just, like, Johnny answered them all instead of, like, Matt. Just Matt just sat
Matt
there
hasn't spoken
quiet, hasn't like... spoken for the entire episode.
I'm hello, everyone. I'm happy with Johnny to answer if he wants to answer. It's his podcast.
Okay, Johnny, so... what's your perfect Sunday?
My lover.
All right, my love. Right, question 2. Get on with it, Chris. What's your approach to original projects compared to his, and by his he means you, Matt, function band work? Are they both kept completely separate / compartmentalized?
Ooh. That's a big word.
That was a big word. It's funny because it's completely that I messed up. Are they both kept completely separate / compartmentalized, or is it a crossover? For example, playing styles, tones, note choices, etc. Question mark. That is a long one.
So, just so I understand, is my original stuff in any way related to my function stuff?
I think it's for me. I read that question as like a kind of how do you approach what you do with your original projects versus. How do you approach doing function work? Is there a crossover? If so, what is it? And then some of the examples could be playing styles, tones, note choices.
Okay, playing so for awesome. Yeah, so for function stuff, I typically I do a mix of like bands that I'm just always in, and then depth work. So for depth work, I'll literally just do whatever they want. It's not my band. I'm probably going to play between 1 and 3 gigs with them, unless, you know, I get called back like once a year because someone can't do another gig, like their regular bass player. So whatever they want is what goes. I will take a bass that I'm comfortable with, typically a 5-string for depth work, just because people move keys around a lot and I don't want to have to use like pitch correction and with like a pedal or anything. So typically I'll take a 5-string just because it's easier. I actually usually take the signature model just because it's light, it's a nice neck for me. I don't have to really think about playing it. It's just one of those basses. I pick it up, I know where I am straight away, and it's just easy to learn 2 hours of music in a couple of hours and then be able to go either gig or to rehearsals. So flat EQ, bass I'm familiar with, and whatever the client or the band wants in terms of, like, you know, literally their guidance. They go, okay, on bar 8 we're going to do a break where it's just vocals. I'm like, yep, fine, it's not part of the original song, I don't care, it's your songs, it's your performance, I'm here just to facilitate you being able to do that performance. My bands that like are regular giggers, I have more flexibility, so generally they don't try and change keys too much. So it's usually within a semitone of like original keys most of the time. So actually I can play most of the set list without a 5. I still often take the 5 just because it's a bass that I enjoy playing, and again, it's an easy bass to play, so for me. So it's one of those ones that I can just concentrate on giving more of a performance to the crowd if it's like, say, like a, you know, quite a busy festival or something like that, and like throw myself around on stage a bit and know that I'm not going to be like fluffing notes and stuff like that. So from the point of view, taking that pressure off and being able to give more of a good performance, I like to have that kind of comfort level. Tones, again, I don't typically tend to do too much. I've got my preamp pedal set up how I like it now, so I generally keep it quite a flat EQ. I have compression on full, and then I have like quite a mid scooped drive, which is just my go-to for drives. Like, I like to take the mids out mainly.
What is that for the listeners?
So for the function stuff, it's the Walrus Audio Badwater typically. I have just got this guy, I don't know if you can see him. I've just got this guy, so I'm going to start using him, the new Ashdown Pro Bass DI. So I'm going to start taking this guy out alongside the Walrus and just B2Bing him. This doesn't have a compressor on it, which is the only downside for me, but it does have other cool features which kind of almost like balance it out one way or another, because it's got like active and passive like padding, and it's got like a cool like pre-EQ scoop on it and stuff like that. So like that is actually quite useful. I've been using that for just like doing some demos for people recently, and I'm actually, well, that's, this scoop thing is actually really fucking cool.
What does that do actually? Is that some sort of like preparation before you even like begin using the pedal?
Yeah, so it kind of almost changes like the voicing of the pedal, if that makes sense. I need to like, okay. I don't know at what frequencies it cuts it yet. It makes it sound like to my ear, it's a mid scoop. So it takes like a load of like the like quite aggressive mids out, and then you get almost like a, it sounds, when you run it with the drive, it sounds like a lot more modern. So because it's got like a valve emulation drive like channel on it, it makes it sound a bit like clankier, for lack of a better term, rather than it being like that woolly drive that you would get.
Clanky is a word that you can just say and every bass player goes, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, rather than it being like a woolier drive of like a warmer vintage valve.
Always makes me laugh that. How is warm a sound? Do you know what I mean? But then we don't say cold. We say like brittle or like clangy. You know, but do you know what I mean? Like I've always, ever since the second someone went, oh, it's very warm, I was like, it's not, the window's open. Like it just doesn't make sense to my brain, but yet we all do it.
I feel like it's become really... Go on.
No, you.
I was just gonna say, I feel like it's become synonymous with like a rich tone. Like it's like a soup, isn't it? It's like tone soup. It's a warm tone soup.
I always perceive...
make you feel fuzzy inside.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Again, fuzzy, not a sound. Fuzzy is a feeling.
Start making bases.
See, fuzzy, like, I think you can say that that's like a sound, because it's like, because you can have like that staticky kind of like woolly sound, and I know you can say woolly's not a sound, but like,
yeah, I know, but you just described fuzzy by using two other words instead, so do we need to use fuzzy? And also, I guess you could think about fuzzy because you think, oh, fuzzy, fuzz pebble, oh, fuzz.
So this is kind of what I was talking about last
week. It's very
week,
wet,
Chris.
What does that mean?
Oh, it sounds so soggy, moist, yeah. Tone,
it's a bit dry. It's not a cake.
Last week, I was talking about the way that, like, Yvette Young talks about tone, yeah, and shapes and colours and that kind of descriptions. And that it feels very much like this conversation, where it's like, we know what these words don't mean anything, but they do at the same time.
I would like to discuss with someone, like, the actual, like, almost create a categorisation. Like, for me, warm, I always think, like, oh, maybe there's, like, a bit more low mids. Or it's, you know, a bit of the trebles come off, so it's kind of got that, you know, I'm trying not to say warm.
Maybe it's because vowels get
warm. Feeling.
Does
well,
warm
yeah, it's like, different. That's a really good point, actually. Like, the association of a valve tone is usually got a bit more, fuck's sake, a bit more warmth to it compared to, like, a solid state tone, which is a bit more, I was going to say punchy then, and I'm like, that's definitely not a sound.
Does guitar and bass warm sound different to you? Because it does to me. Like, warmer guitar tone would be like with a bit of the tone scooped off and stuff like that, you know.
I was gonna say a warm guitar tone might be a bit, and again I'm saying another one, might be a bit barky.
See, no, what? I don't associate warm with barky. I'd expect on like the bridge kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah, you don't use bridge snappy. For a warm yeah snappy, like, yeah,
snappy. Spanky. No, but I'm thinking like a Peter Green. Like, you know, the out of phase, like mid punch. Punch, again, punch is not a sound. God, anyway,
a punch does make a sound.
A punch does make a sound, and it's nothing like a bass.
Wow, that tone sounded great.
That's ow.
What were we talking
anyway,
about?
Anyway,
I actually can't remember. What were we talking about?
Oh, we were talking about tones. I was actually asking you about the pre EQ. On the Ashdown pedal, and you were saying you're not entirely sure.
I don't know what frequency
what it does, but yeah. When you put the drive on.
It makes it sound more modern.
It's got that clank.
It's the clank. Yeah. So I'm going to be using that as alongside the Walrus. So that was the two functional covers things. And then originals, it depends who you're working for. So if I'm just doing like solo writing, I'll just like, I don't know, throw both pickups on the Vorosaku, throw a ton of like soppy old reverb on there, and then just do like, you know, chord
soppy.
Stuff. Sopping with reverb, but like, oh. I, you know, and then I'll use the LB30 because it's so warm. But like, if I'm doing like metal stuff, which is quite kind of like a lot of what I do, then like, it's kind of depends on what project it is. So like Whalebone stuff is typically in kind of like A sharp, so again I'll use the Voronsaku. I want, for that one, that's what that bass was spec'd for, so I want almost no treble in my signal at all. All I want is lows and mids. I'm probably going to be running, like, fuzz, like, not massively, like, on, but, like, I'm going to have, say, like, I don't know, 20% of my signal is going to be a bit of fuzz, like, just on, basically, but to, like, give me some, like...
Yeah.
You know, saturation, essentially. And then, you know, or I might run a drive. I like to keep... Sometimes I double track as well, so I'll keep a signal clean, and then I'll have like duplicate the signal and have like either reamp it or, you know, use like a plugin. Ooh, or something.
I was going to go nerdy with you then. When you say you're double tracking, are you recording, duplicating the track digitally and then reamping? But you're not tracking it twice.
Depends. So I'll do both. If I've got like a really, really intricate bit where I've got like a perfection take, I'm like,
yeah, like I really don't think I can do it twice.
I cannot get this as accurate as this twice. Like, it's like, you know, you've everything aligned and it's like, oh, the master take. You're like, okay, fuck it. There's no point me trying to get it again and it sound worse. Like, the project needs to sound, you know, what's better for the project? Me, you know, trying to stoke my ego and trying to go for a second take, or just know that I did it what I need and duplicate it. Sometimes, so what I like to do though is with the bass six, do a separate track, because it sounds slightly different, and when you track with the bass six on things, you get this kind of like sympathetic string vibration behind the bridge and then over the nut, and you can do some really fun stuff with that. But like that's a fun one to like just do a completely separate take. Or I'll use like two completely separate basses just for different like tonalities. So like I'll have, say, I don't know, an example might be I'll have a jazz bass, clean pickups, like both pickups on full tone, and I'll get that almost like kind of
super scoopy,
bit more scoopy than like a P bass, but you've still got like that neck pickup coming in and giving you that kind of like P bass approximation. It's not the same thing, but you know what I mean, like it gives you an kind of a similar-ish vibe.
Yeah,
you a get away with it kind of thing. And then I'll have that clean, and then I might run like a bass with like mini humbuckers, or like I don't know, a PJ, or like, you know, two humbuckers or something just weird and different as like my drive thing to have a bit more punch, but you know, give me some maybe more trebles or something like that. And then just like be like, okay, you know, here's this, here's two tracks.
So and that sound more different, experimental, and you know, open to
100%. Like, it's for me, it's like, what does a project need, and how much leeway have I got? Is it like, is it my originals in one of the bands that I work with, or one of the people that I record with, like, all the time? Or is it like, I'm doing originals, but I'm doing originals essentially as a session guy, where
for
like,
someone else, yeah.
And again,
it's
good, like,
it's good
differentiation.
What I'm looking for, differentiation. Warm. That's the one. My brain is just so fuzzy right now. It's a good thing to notice that those two things are different.
Yeah, like, you know, like, and I think as bass players, we all know, like, we're not the, I wouldn't say typically we're like the ego players of the band. You know, we're often a supporting role. I've seen that Chris guy.
Don't go watch him, trust me. God, what a knobhead.
But you know what I mean? Fundamentally, we're in a foundational role. So we're there to support the song, what sounds best, how are you allowing the guitar player to go and take like a solo that they want to go and take, and keep like a cool groove going, keep that back, like that back line essentially going and carrying the song so that people can go off and do frilly shit. Like, I will say that recently some of the most fun I've been having from doing my own original stuff is I've got a project with Chris from Funeral for a Friend. I think we've got like 7 or 8 tracks
exclusive
done. Exclusive. Yeah, and we've got like 7 or 8 like death metal tracks, and they've been so fun. And the first time I started tracking them, I really had to kind of like up my game, because he does like tons of like string skipping riffs, and they're super fun, and they sound amazing, but you cannot play them on bass. Like, you have to do tapping and stuff like that, and like you're like arpeggiating chords through tapping and stuff, which is like super fun, but like tapping has always been something that I've not been like particularly interested in as a player. So I had to do it for this to make the song sound how I wanted it to sound, and to like almost keep that octave relationship between guitar and bass going. And that was so fun. And it's actually really made me into tapping a bit now, because I'm like, oh, actually, like, this is really fun if you're playing it like, you know, in the right context.
I've just done a major like tangent in my brain, and I'm trying to remember what it was going to say. Speaking of Funeral for a Friend, whenever I have to play like something silly on bass for people to go like, oh, Chris, do this, I'll always play. I'm trying to remember the name of the Funeral for a Friend song. It's the guitar part that's a tap where you tap on the 7th and 9th of the D and G strings, and then you hit the B, and you go like da 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 da.
Roses for the Dead.
Roses for the Dead. I play that on bass with a load of fuzz on, and everyone goes like, "Oh my god, he's so good!" And I'm like, "Thanks. This is like the first tapping thing I ever learned when I was 13."
I'm gonna let him know that, and then he's gonna come for you.
You should let him know. He can have a go at me. Yeah.
No, he's an absolute sweetheart. Shout out, Chris. Yeah, no, Escape the Fate, fucking hell. That's Ronnie Radke, wasn't it? Was it?
It was.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then now he's... Is he like a felon?
No. I think he's a felon.
Cheeky old fellow and felon.
No. I think he actually is, you know. I think something quite bad happened and he can't leave the US.
There's something weird going on, and now he's like, yeah, he's like calling bands out. It's very Trapped-esque. I don't have enough interest in it to know.
Not a fan.
No.
I actually saw Escape the Fate at Slam Dunk this year, and I thought they were really, really bad.
Is he still in that band?
No, he hasn't been in that band for years now. He's in Falling in Reverse.
Oh yeah, of course he is.
But like that first album from Escape the Fate, you know.
I never got into Escape the Fate. I'm trying to think of what I was listening to back then. It was probably like a combination of like Meshuggah and My Chemical Romance.
That is a lineup I would go to.
I'd go to that right now. If someone said Meshuggah is touring with my Mike, I'd be like, take my money. Take my car right now.
Let's go.
I don't care if it's in Sweden.
We'll drive. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll go in the Micra. It's got a new tyre.
it's got wheels now. Absolutely. What would be one better than Meshuggah? Would it be Meshuggah opening for My Chem? Because the reason why I think that would be better is because you'd have all the My Chem fans.
My Chem fans
who don't know, haven't got a clue what they're listening to, or in absolute horror. Exactly. But what I would rather see is I want to see Meshuggah covering a full set of My Chem songs, but it's still What's His Face playing drums.
Thomas,
it's like teenagers with the over the top of it. That would be right up my street.
I've always wanted to do a Meshuggah and Disney crossover project.
Yes. Was it After the Burial? Or was it Betraying the Martyrs who did that cover of Let It Go?
I have no idea.
I'll find it for you.
It sounds like a band that needs to be formed, guys.
True. It's very good. It's like a super heavy version of Let It Go. But then when the chorus kicks in, it's super heavy, but they've gone for like big pop vocal production.
And it's
so good because they put like a big screamo section before it, and then the chorus kicks in with piano and everything, and it's so good. It's so good. Wow. What were we talking about?
Speaking of good, your playing style, Matt, how would you say it kind of differs with your original stuff to, you know, because some people might just be like, oh, I'll just play a finger style, I'll just play with a pick the whole time. But like, do you find yourself...
So cover stuff, I actually mainly play finger style, to be honest, which is funny because like on Instagram, I barely ever do. But I try and separate those two things actually, because I want to keep my finger style up to speed. And when I first started playing bass, I only used to pick because I'd come from guitar. So I sat down for like a year and just forced myself to play just finger style stuff. And I like was learning... Like,
I had to do that.
Jamiroquai lines and like Jaco and stuff, and like now, to be honest, I would say I'm probably as if not more proficient with my fingers than I am with a pick. I can obviously hybrid pick and stuff, which I do like just for the gram mainly, but I don't really ever do it that for projects, because it's really good if you're doing that kind of like polyphia trap stuff where you're kind of like having that fun relationship with like hi-hats and like a kick and stuff. But for metal, obviously you've just got that underneath it all the time, and so it's like this is just getting lost in that. And also I'd rather just being like and then like doing some tapping shit. So finger style a lot of the time at functions. I try and throw a little bit slap in now and then as well. So I'm lucky that I'm in like two function bands for like weddings and stuff where they do quite a lot of like funk in the set. So I try and do a bit of slap just to keep that going. But yeah, and then for the metal stuff, I typically use a pick, and then I'll obviously tap sections as required. So yeah, that's kind of what I do. It keeps you fresh.
Now, because I'm sure there'll be people at home listening, I'm one of them, thinking like, God, like, I wish I could play like that. And how can I get...
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To that level. We'll try not to stay on it for too long, but are there any kind of recommendations you give people to access that higher skill level or those different techniques, any particular songs or bands or yeah, just advice
for sure. So if you want to learn any kind of good modern metal slap stuff, look at my guy Jacob Umansky. Dude's a beast, absolute beast, and he's taught me loads as well. Like, he's a really nice guy. Also, I think it was last year, I'd always been really reluctant to take any kind of like formal education in terms of like technique or theory. And then I kind of sat down, I was like, I've got some missing information that in this repertoire of mine that I need to kind of acknowledge. And so I kind of did a bit of self-seeking and was like, right, okay, well, I need to humble myself a little bit and realize that I'm actually not as good as I, you know, should be. So I took two lessons with Clay Gober, and it was a little bit a while ago, actually. It wasn't last year, it was the year before, but it was during lockdown. I took two lessons with Clay Gober of Polyphia. I took Jacob taught me how to double thumb. Felix Pastorius taught me some theory stuff. I was basically just like, right, I'm gonna take
impressive name drop there at the end.
Wow, Felix. Oh, Felix is killer, dude. Yeah. He's so smart. Like, he was just like, blah, here's all of this theory. And I was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. What's a major scale? No, but like, he was just like telling me stuff and it was like literally blowing my mind. He's killer. So if you ever need some really concise theory training, reach out to him. I took those three lots of lessons with those guys. So it was probably something like four or five lessons in total. And then, because I like self-learning a lot, I took those like very foundational elements of what I was trying to learn off them and then just sat and shredded them. So like double thumbing, like I sat and literally just spent days and days and days doing stuff like that. So it is a graft. Certainly with double thumbing as well, because a lot of the time you're doing lines where you're like hammering on with a finger first and then go like, and so you're going like hammering on with your, like, say, like your ring finger, and then you go with your thumb, and then like, so you go like that, and like you're like trying, like you're having to train your left hand to be out of time, which feels weird because you're used to going like, and you're going, you're hitting it before your right hand is making any sound. So you're going like, and then you're just doing that like hammer on all the time, but ahead of everything else. So
out of time with your right hand.
Yeah. So that's weird. But you know, that's, it's just about shedding it. Hybrid picking, I would say, just hit me up. I'll give you a lesson if anyone ever wants to learn that, because it's such a long way of explaining. Like, it's really like, it sounds easy-ish when you're hearing it until you realize that like it's going to take you ages to get the dexterity in these three fingers to be able to do it like in any kind of way that's concise. And you also, the hybrid picking, you do quite a lot of this as well. So you're going like, it's like, it's basically the same as double thumbing, but using the pick all the time. So that one, just someone, if you want to learn it, send me a DM, we'll have a Skype lesson or whatever. And then fingerstyle, if you want to get up fingerstyle, I would learn things that have a lot of quite like rhythmic. Disco is really good for it. Anything that's like, and it's just got like a really solid foundational thing where you're doing like, I don't know, you know, eighth notes or 16ths or whatever you want to be doing, and then you can start throwing like octaves in and stuff, because it's really good for like learning like floating technique, because you've got like a light finger and then you're going like dicka 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 like that and stuff. It's just like Chic is good for it. Bernard was a killer bass player. Jacko
line, really good line. Really good line to get good at disco is "I Don't Feel Like Dancing" by the Scissor Sisters, because it's octaves, but a lot of it is. So you'll do the root octave, the lower octave, once, but then you'll very quickly jump up and hit that one twice.
Yeah.
So you're going boom, da-da-boom, 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 da-da, and you need to do that, like, the song does it almost all the way through, non-stop. So it's a nice little, but once you get into the, you know, the lower, higher, higher, and you're doing it with strict, I was going to call it strict alternate picking, but it's not, strict left, right, you're not always hitting the low string with the same finger, so you're jumping at a weird cadence for the right hand. But once you get comfortable with that, I found I got really quick at jumping between the strings with the right hand.
It's amazing what other skills that can bleed into, like, and take you onto other songs and be like, oh God, I'm so much better now all round, you know, just
yeah.
Like any Wolfpack songs are really good for that as well. Like they're just really, really good. Yeah. Like, you know, obviously like it goes without saying, but like Dean Town, like it's a bass anthem these days, obviously, but like bringing that one up to speed and the consistency from the start where it's like a minute of digga 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 digga
digga digga digga digga digga digga. Yeah, everyone thinks about the boom, 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 when it gets into it, the bit that everyone's dancing to. But that bit at the start, you don't realise how fast and consistent that is.
And you're fucked by the time you get to that.
It's like a pre-exhaustion.
It's like playing Bleed. Like, it's that level of tired. Like, you're just like, make it stop. But that one, Disco Ulysses, is really good for those disco octaves as well. Like that one's really good. And then Runaway by Jamiroquai. That's a really good fingerstyle one.
Yeah.
So those three, if you want to get good at fingerstyle, those ones are good. And then if you want to get really good at fingerstyle, you could do stuff like, and it's not more of a stamina thing, but more of a kind of like string skipping-esque exercise. Do stuff like Teen Town by Weather Report, Jacko. That one is like my go-to all the time, even for warming up and stuff now. Like, I just love that song, and it's really good because it's got like octaves, so you're like string skipping, and it's got like a load of like really fast chromatic, like I think 16ths or something like that. So like it gets you across the fretboard really fast, but you're kind of doing like fun string stuff in between. It's a really good song. And that one's like a good little workout. And it's fun to just throw jazz bass on the bridge as well, scoop all the tone and just go honky. But yeah, that's a good one. And then pick stuff. I mean, how long's a piece of string? You know what I mean? If you're just a guy who wants to just go like dun dun and like just do solid like root chugging.
It's called learn all the Black Album.
Yeah, literally.
And then learn all of Master Puppets. Basically, just get into Metallica and you'll be fine.
Well, do you only downstroke or do you like alternate pick?
Well, am I having a good day or a bad day?
I actually almost all the time alternate pick.
I have noticed that video I sent you to, which is an Instagram reel I haven't uploaded yet, I only realised when I watched it back, I did loads of down picking for that entire set, and it was for an indie wedding band. I just did the whole set with a pick, and because loads of it's just eighth note stuff, like a relatively jumpy tempo, I was just going da 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 for ages. But I would say for bass, I'm just thinking through, like, say, like the Darla set, for example. It's a lot of alternate picking, but it's not songs. But it's not songs that you have to alternate pick. I could down pick all of that set easily, but I don't want to. But then if I picked a guitar up, I'd be like, no, I want to downpick it. But that's from spending too much time looking at James Hetfield as a teenager and going, yeah, it's not that hard.
I've always been alternate pick, and I think it's because you can keep your hand like super tight and just like just do that little... Like, I'm all about these days, certainly, like just...
Like economics and stuff like that, ergonomics.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and I think I've said that maybe last pod as well. Like, I just try and keep everything as like... I have to move as little as possible to get what I need. Because then you're like, you know, you could play like, I think it's coming from like long sets as well. Like, you know, if you're playing original stuff.
Just about to say that. Yeah, sorry. Everything. Pardon?
Long sets. Yes,
what? Oh, phew.
What? I was going to say the exact same thing. Everything, I noticed lots of changes in my playing when it went from you're playing for 30 minutes to you're playing for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like so much changed in terms of like, I noticed as well what I used to do, and I didn't know I was doing this until I realized I was doing it, not necessarily wrong, but you know how Geddy Lee is quite famous for like coming down on the string from quite a distance, and that's how you get that absolute wallop of a pick attack with fingers. I realized when I started playing bass, I was doing closer to that, so coming in from really high down into the string, and it did sound really good. I was really happy with the sound. But I'd get 25 minutes into playing and be absolutely annihilated. Mm. And then I only realised when I got into like the function and the wedding scene and playing for so long that I realised I started picking, you know, starting the motion of picking way closer to the string. So now it's like I'm barely leaving the string while I'm picking. But in terms of like the picking in terms of down and up strokes, I think it's from an influence perspective. Like one of my biggest musical influences is James Hetfield. So it's all about down picking for me, because every time I do anything that's like long periods of down picking, I'm like, yep, I am James Hetfield. I'm now in Metallica, which obviously I'm not, but I'd really like to be.
Yeah, I feel like when going between playing style, like techniques, I feel like I'm a different player. Like I will all of a sudden just gravitate towards such different lines if I'm playing.
Oh, I do too. Or pick, absolutely.
Like, totally different. And yeah, I think bringing it back to Matt's point about learning all these different techniques, it can help you across the board and broaden your horizons when you get more and more techniques in there. And it's a difficult thing to do, teaching yourself and realize, coming to that realization and that fear. I get this all the time of the fear of having to admit that I'm not good at something, or I'm, oh God, it's like I should be better and I'm not facing the music, literally, that I need to get better at this.
It's hard to admit that you're like really crap at something for sometimes quite a long time before you get good at it.
And the YouTube comments have been telling me for a long time that I'm terrible. Mm. So I don't know why it's not getting through my skull, but there we go.
I think for me now, it's more of like, I realize like how long I've neglected theory for, because like now I'm like trying to deep dive theory more. I'm like, fuck, that makes so much sense. Like, why did I never think that? And like, I've even bought just like recently, like maybe a month ago, I'll find out who it's from, but like I bought this like circle of fifths wheel thing. Just cause I'm like, this is going to be a learning tool for me. Like, I'm not good enough to just be able to think meh, meh, meh. So like now I like literally I sit with this little shitty book that he gave me, and I'm like, ah, yes, this all is a thing. And I'm like just trying to get that in my brain, you know what I mean? And like I've just been like deep diving modal stuff and things like that just to try and get a bit better. Because like, I feel like
it all fell to pieces with me with modes. That was when everything up to modes I'm pretty comfortable with. But then it's just I get so bogged down in the, am I Lydian now? No, because the chord is a C. So it's Locrian. No, it can't be Locrian because you were just playing. You know what I mean? It's like you get all mixed up in what does each one sound like. And the only one I'm good at is I know Lydian sounds like Joe Satriani. That's literally all I can do.
Well, what I've started doing is that like, because I started learning it like one way, and I was like, and they're like, learn the tonalities of the modes so that you can hear if they like sound like pensive or like kind of a bit like, you know, like Middle Eastern kind of thing, because that's what the people say, right? And like,
well, yeah, because if you, as soon as you play like Phrygian dominant, everyone, you're either in Slayer or the Middle East.
Yeah, literally. And and I was like, I just don't really get those vibes from the way that I'm learning it in this way. And then I heard someone say, just do them from root notes. So like, say you're in the key of, I don't know, like let's just say like A for just the sake of this. Start each mode on the A. So like, you know how like on a major scale you'd kind of like do from an A, you'd kind of like do like a fifth, seventh, and then eighth fret or whatever it is. Fifth, seventh, and eighth. Fifth, seventh, and then you'd move up a string. So like, rather than like that second note becomes your A then, and then that third note up a string becomes your A. Like, and you've just started the mode from the A, but you're not doing it as if you're just like moving a major scale up a like a fret every time kind of thing. And then it made way more sense to me, and I was like, oh, actually you can really hear the tonalities in that thing if you're playing like over a drone or something like that.
Yeah,
at that point
I was gonna say the way to mention Joe Satriani again, the thing he mentioned was he would get a piano and he would just play a let's just pretend it's an A. He would have an A going and he'd keep his foot on the sustain pedal, and then he'd go, right, okay, A Lydian. And he'd mess around in A Lydian and be like, what does that sound like, the relation between like kind of like, oh, the sixth is sharp when we do this one.
Yeah.
And then he'd go, right, okay, well, we'll do Phrygian now, which has that kind of like, again, that Middle Eastern kind of flavour. And it would be like, I need to get used to what do these notes sound like against that low drone. Because in isolation, it doesn't matter, does it? Because
it's like, all just sound
scale.
Yeah, they all just sound like scales. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm still pretty much just playing a major scale. You know what I mean? They all just sound like major scale.
And I think that that's a hand. The drone bit is a thing that people can try for themselves at home. Like,
all over
even
YouTube.
If this is going over people's heads, a lot of it goes over my head. You know, on a level of the playing field here, a lot of this goes way over my head. But I can relate to this slightly in that drone part, because I've done things exactly like that, where I'll just be like, right, I'm just going to literally go in Logic, have a drone note, and then just see what happens from there. And you kind of, and without, I don't know that I'm doing it, but it's this theory coming into it where I'm finding the notes that fit with this or that sound isolated. I would never have come up with this, but because that drone is there, it fits around it and I'm playing something around it. So
yeah, you're doing the exact same thing. You just don't have the names associated to them, which I'm sure a lot of people would argue, like, no one really cares if you go, well, actually this one was Mixolydian. People are just going to go, well, did I like it or not? Really.
I find that for like original stuff a lot. Like, no one has ever asked me, like, you know, what's the corresponding like modal tonality of this piece of like fill that you've done or whatever. And I'm like, realistically, I'd not be able to tell them.
So I'd be like, the next question on the podcast. So,
oh no.
Sorry. Speaking of next questions, shall we move on to the final segment of the show?
Bit of context before I say this episode's question, even though it's not really a question, it's more of a statement. So this is in relation to a bit of a conversation we were having, the three of us, a couple of days ago, or was it earlier today?
It was a few days ago.
A few days ago. The passage of time means nothing to me anymore. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. This is just, I can't believe you think this. I'm quoting Matthew Parker here. Did you just
that, I mean, that puts to bed anything you're about to say. Just undermine yourself completely.
I don't even care.
You could literally,
I'm such a dad
like,
now.
Prove like the appearance of Jesus right now, and no one would believe you.
I'm going for it. 2015's column, oh, baby.
I'm just Yeet. Nice. Someone's been watching his Drag Race. Very good.
Sasha away at the end of this.
Yes, Sasha, you stay. Is this absolute dumpster fire garbage quote from Matt Parker? Oh, I hate you. The base six is my desert island base. Go on, dig yourself out of this.
So I feel like, to caveat, what I mean is that I think it's my desert island instrument. So as a tool.
That's not what you said though, is it, Matt?
No, because I'm a bass player.
Objection.
So, I mean, straight up, and I don't mean that as it's not my favourite bass that I own. It's certainly the most useful. So what I mean by that is, you guys have heard stuff that I've done on the bass 6 that's not on the podcast yet, but like, you can do so much with it. You can make it sound like a bass, you can make it sound like a guitar, you can do really nice like shoegazy intros with it, you can crank it through a load of fuzz and it's a doomstick. It's just, it's one of those instruments that just does more acceptably. It's like, it's a real jack of all trades. So like, that's why it would be my desert island bass, because I'd be able to play bass and guitar and make soundscapes with it, rather than just being on an island with a P bass and being like, okay, cool, I can do P bass sounds. So, like, you know what I mean? That's why I'm saying that statement. And I'm also here to fight the good fight of the bass six is a good bass. Like, I feel like it gets a misservice because every demo ever on YouTube is a guitar player trying to play it like a guitar and stumbling because there's too much string tension. And they're like, I'm going to play a fuckload of really complex chords, and it just sounds muddy because they're not playing it properly, and they're playing it through guitar rigs. And it's like, yeah, I've got a fucking Boss Katana and I'm going to play this shit through it. And I'm like, you're not tailoring a setup to the instrument. What you're doing is you're trying to take an instrument and run it through your regular setup, and it's going to sound suboptimal.
That being said, at best, it's going to sound like a guitar with a pitch shifter in front of it, which is not a bass.
I think you can get good sounds from doing something like that, but you have to play it the right way. Like, you can't just be like chucking chords on it and normal stuff. You have to have the purpose.
100%. Like, and so to fight that good fight, like, I regularly gig mine as the only bass on stage, and I have never ever had someone come up to me and go, that was shit bass sound. Like, I took it out for a gig on Saturday.
Well, we haven't gigged together yet, but you never know.
Wait till the boys see ya.
Chris is a bass six denier.
I genuinely, if I had the money, I think I'd just buy one and then still swear blind that I hate it, but gig it loads. Almost like a weird irony.
Worst money I've ever spent.
Chris has never played one, and is still on this like pedestal of like how
Chris
it's
has
not...
played one. Chris has played one for about 5 minutes, I think. I did say it was actually quite good. But the internet has decided that I hate them, and I can't work out whether I should actually say, well, no, actually, I did try it and thought it was quite good. I thought it was cool. Or just branding.
Chris, your personality's boiled down to three things of hate. Bass 6s, short scales, and knobs on the inside of something.
Hey, the third one, I will die on that.
Oh, I'll stand by you with that.
I'm always willing to change, but not that one. That is the dumbest idea in the world.
Yeah. Bass 6 is just like a real double whammy for Chris.
Oh,
absolutely.
Just the controls will be on the inside. On
and then Matt's going to mod it, make it active, and put all the EQ controls under the scratch plate.
You have to remove the trem. You have to remove the trem to get the battery in.
Yeah, you have to. You can only do it with a key from a gate of three houses ago from where you used to live.
Yeah, in Norwich.
Yeah. The translation for the password is on a kebab menu from 1997.
Staple to a router somewhere in like Uzbekistan or something. Like
it's
that.
Not a tone knob; it's the warmth knob and the moist knob. It's just all the sounds that aren't sounds.
All it is like it makes your like note that you play like a really like drawn out like Wigan accent going warm.
Oh, it's right. Falls. Warm, this. No. Oh no.
Micro.
It's not a good episode yet.
It's always nice getting bullied by two southerners.
I'm from fucking Sheffield.
But you know, fake northerner.
Yes.
All right, Alex Turner, calm down.
But the bass six is.
Don't play it.
I'm not going to play it, don't worry. Got a mute on, am I? Yeah, I mean, like, it's a killer thing. Like, it feels like a short-scale bass to me. Like, the string spacing is tight, obviously, but, you know, this switching is really the secret sauce of this instrument, because I can't think of many other triple single pickup, single coil basses where you can do, like, neck and bridge as like one super wide humbucker, or you can just have a middle, or you can do a strangle switch and it sounds way more like a baritone guitar. Like, you know, it's just tonally it's such a versatile palette that you can make an entire song string section from one instrument.
Well, before we go on, let's have a listen to the different things you can do out of that by listening to a couple of the sound samples that you've brought along.
Thank you.
So some quite different sounding tracks that we've got there, all recorded on the same bass six. I was really taken back by some of these because they sound so different. I was like, they don't sound like the same bass, surely. We had a slap one in there, and I heard that one first, and that's kind of more what I was expecting from the bass six in like a more in that kind of setup, that scenario. And then we played the rock one, and that's the one I want to start off talking about because that really took me back. I was like, oh, yes, I get it. This sounds great. Like, it really showed the versatility of this tool that is an instrument and sounded great in that context. It, like, wouldn't sound out of place. Like, if you just had that in a band scenario, I probably wouldn't have thought twice. I would have been like, oh, that sounds like maybe a nice short scale or something. Not like, yeah, it's bass six, which I suppose in a way is a nice short scale, but like, yeah, it didn't sound a lot of people wouldn't have thought, oh yeah, that's bass six, just sounds like a normal bass. Explain yourself, what was the idea going into that one?
So that tone, I was just trying to make like an approximation of like a good, probably in my mind it was more of like a rock P bass type sound, or maybe like a Mustang, something with kind of like a split coil. So what I was running is the two front pickups on that, and then the strangle switch and the bridge pickup off, so you were just getting like full balls out bass but with no bridge to like brighten it out. And because of that, you kind of do get quite a good P approximation because you've got that single coil in the middle, which is very reminiscent of like a 51P style, and then you just add more warmth and probably a bit of a low end boost by running the neck in as well. That was with the tone probably at about like 85% as well, just to like round it out a little bit more. And then I just ran it through the Origin FX DCX bass to give me some drive sounds.
Oh, wow.
And that was like a real winner combo for me. And that's kind of just to show anyone who's like, it doesn't sound like a bass because they've heard, I don't know, like, you know, some generic guitar player demo on YouTube playing it. I was there to show you, no, through a bass rig, playing it like a bass player, it sounds like a bass. So that was kind of where I was going with that one, and I wanted to show that really it can sit in the mix well alongside a kit and fulfill your requirements as like the fundamental like backline ensemble instrument type thing, you know, as like a bass and drum relationship. So that's kind of the logic behind that one.
It's interesting you say about fitting in with a kit in a band situation. I mean, ultimately that's what it's about, because when you hear them in isolation, like the slapping one, you know, I'll be honest, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, I don't love that. And that's because it, out of context, I don't think it sound like, what am I trying to say here without saying, oh, it sounds bad, because it doesn't sound bad. It sounds good, but it doesn't sound what you'd expect from a slap tone. You know, I mean, I'm expecting to hear a jazz bass or like a Stingray or something like that, something that's quite poppy and yeah, doesn't sound like that. But when you put it in situation with the drums, you know, different story. It sounds good, and people wouldn't pick it out as being like, oh, that sounds bad. So it's just about putting that mix first, isn't it? And showing that it can do it.
On the slap one as well, I purposely went on the back pick. Like, I could have been more deceitful with that one and brought the middle pickup in as well, and that would have made it sound a lot more like a jazz bass. But I wanted to show what the single coil on the back, the bridge pickup, sounds like isolated as still like using it as a bass, so like strangle switch off. Because typically what happens when people want to use it as more of like a baritone setup is it's on the bridge pickup and or maybe the neck with like reverb or whatever, but it's typically on the bridge and then they've got the strangle switch on to take all the low end out, and then it sounds a lot more like kind of like that tic-tac-y sound that people know. So it's tic-tac bass.
Sound.
Yeah, it's like the way that they used to call that kind of like country and western bass. So it's like ding, 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 ding. Like, it's called like tic-tac bass.
I prefer Eminem bass. Or polo.
But then I also kind of like, you know, because a lot of people have this preconception with bass six that because the string spacing is very tight, you can only play it with a pick. And so I just want to show you can actually slap basics, you know, you're still hearing all those percussive like triplets in there and stuff like that. And it was just like, you can actually do all of that with it as well. Obviously it sounds very kind of like 80s 90s slap tone where it's like all treble and like it almost sounds MIDI, but you know, I wouldn't say that's my preferred slap tone, but again, as you said, if you heard it contextually within a mix, I don't think you'd be like, oh, there's something horrendously wrong with this. You'd just probably like, it's quite a honky slap tone.
It's an interesting thing that we have to admit sometimes, that I don't have to have this perfect tone by itself to be the best thing in the mix, you know. Now, I am, for the listeners at home, my experience with the Bass 6, I've had the Schecter Hellcat, and I've played the Squire one before. The Schecter Hellcat was very similar, but you could have humbuckers in each position and then split them. So like six different sounds, essentially. I really enjoyed that, really got along with it. So my experience with the Bass 6 is kind of like, yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to replace any of my other basses with it, but it was good fun, and I wrote some different things with it, you know, and used it in both contexts in my demo of like guitar and bass, and like how you could use it in combination with all of those. Chris, I want to go to you now, because I feel like I'm kind of in the middle, where I can understand the frustrations with it, and like, oh, well, I don't have that, but then at the same time be like, yeah, I've owned one, it's good fun, and as Matt's demonstrated, you can get some good sounds. How are you feeling right now?
Again, the internet thinks I dislike this instrument a lot more than I actually do.
Convince me.
I know, just lean into it. Like, I think Matt, you do an excellent job of showing an actual usable bass perspective of the instrument. Like, I've watched those. I remember those initial demos that came out on certain quite large publications, where it was basically just a naff baritone guitar, and there was no like interest in terms of like capturing a bass player market. It was like, yeah, this is a really cool like guitar-y bass thing, and maybe some bass player will try it and maybe they'll like it. But the two tones, especially that you've shown today, I mean, you could have told me that was like that more rock tone. You could have told me that was a P bass or some sort of short scale Mustang, and I would have believed you. I wouldn't have doubted it for a second. And yeah, the slap one is very MIDI. Like, it sounds like it's a MIDI bass, which is kind of cool at the same time. But they're both perfectly reasonable things. Like, if, you know, if I'd gone round to yours for a brew and I had a gig around the corner and I'd forgot my bass and you handed that to me, I'm not going to go, oh, it's completely unusable, I can't play this. I mean, I probably can't play it because I'll get really confused looking at it. I have two questions, actually. One, what is it tuned to? And two, what do you string it with?
So, great question. Mine is strung, it's tuned slightly differently. Okay. So, even though I started as a guitar player, I've not really played guitar disgusting properly. Says Mr. Guitar in the corner.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Chris Hetfield. Basically,
oh,
he's just got a boner. So
man's bricked up.
He's bricked up.
Fully pitched tent.
I tune mine E A D G C F. So,
ooh, okay.
So not
the E at the end.
No. So okay. Nowadays,
you're in fourths.
Yeah, everything's in fourth. Okay, right. My brain doesn't work with that random B in there anymore. So, like, it just fucks me over when I'm trying to play shapes all the time, and it just pisses me off, frankly.
Interesting.
So
it just kind of ruin it when you play guitar and go, I'm staying here. Oh, no. Got to move everything one fret up. Yay. Yeah,
it's pointless. And, like, often with the Bass 6, I'm not playing... You can obviously play chords on it and stuff like that, but, like, my reference point on that instrument in particular is like bass chords. So like, I'm not trying to play like a really long bar chord or something like that.
No,
like
you're playing like tenths and ninths. And
yeah, I'm like playing triads and stuff like that. Yeah. So like, it makes more sense to have everything kind of in fourth, and shapes remain exactly the same as like if I was playing like a seven string bass. Like,
good point. Yeah.
So I play it very much like a bass player. I have had it strung E to E like a normal guitar. It's fine. Like, it's cool if you want to do like an octave under a song that you know on guitar. So like, I do sometimes just for fun play like Smith songs on it and stuff like that. But like, it's tuned standard 1% of the time. Yeah. Typically, I have it up.
I want to watch someone absolutely like rip Sweet Child of Mine on it. Like, down.
You know what? Slash loves basics. He collects the vintage ones. He's got like...
Yeah, he's past it as a musician, in my opinion.
But yeah, so I have it tuned with the C and the F. And then strings, you get your own... Fender Bass 6 gauge set.
Right. Okay.
So,
I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Special strings. So they are essentially the bottom four. So this is one of the things that's very frustrating about the Bass 6. From Squire, it comes with, I think, an 84 bottom E.
Rubbish.
Which is pointless. So the first thing everyone does is restring them with the proper gauge set, because Fender make a Bass 6 set with 100 low end. So it's like,
okay.
It's
so what? They, what is it like a 100 to a, well, I don't know, what a 42?
I'll have to double check. It's probably maybe.
I was just thinking
like
what the lower E of a guitar would be, lower than like that, a 48.
Let's have a quick look. Fender.
If I've nailed this,
I actually I'm saying 46. Know. 24 to 100.
Oh wow,
it's low. They go thinner than the.
So, well, it's because it's got that high F. So, yeah. I know you don't really play six string bass, but obviously I do quite a bit. No. Like, so, like a high C would be somewhere in the region of like between 33 and 35, and then I've got the F as well. So, like, you'd go obviously.
Yeah, in my brain, I was thinking, oh yeah, I wonder why did I think that? I thought the high E. I'm thinking if it was tuned as a guitar. The high E of the Bass 6 would be the exact same E as the low E on a electric guitar.
I mean, so like a 48. It's the same, but not... Obviously, it's an E, but like...
Yeah.
It would be the same octave as that.
It's the same pitch, isn't it?
It's the same pitch, but the scale length is so much longer.
Oh, that'll explain it. Like, idiot. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, you've got like an extra like 5 inches of scale or whatever. So
don't rise to that. No, come on.
I'm already risen up.
My guy's careful with him. It's like, and you've got to really watch what you say around Johnny, because the eyebrow just goes. The best one you got me on was when we were talking about something we were talking about scale lengths, because I didn't understand. It was a couple of episodes ago. I couldn't remember like, okay, well, what is medium scale? What's short scale? And you were going through all of them. And then at the end, you just went, and 3 inches is Chris Horrocks.
I'm a simple man, you know. I like
simple
things.
Man. Dick jokes, my poo jokes.
I saw something that was it was something like selling dick for $40 an inch, or three for $100.
I don't get that. Hang on. No, you can explain it to me later.
We'll
That's
wait.
Been lost on me. Say it again.
So it's like,
explain.
Are we really going to explain the joke?
The person has a 3-inch penis. Because they've said
Just say the joke again.
Selling dick for $40 an inch, or all three for $100.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't properly hear you the first time you said
it.
So
question.
In my head I was going.
Here's
Go
question,
on.
Though. Would you rather have three 1-inch dicks or one 3-inch dick?
Just one. I would
definitely have three 1-inch dicks, because then at house parties, like, think about what a funny trick that would be to piss three different directions.
Yeah, but you never agree where they are, though.
Yeah, you have no, because it's 1-inch, you haven't got much direction. You haven't got much pivot within each.
Yeah, true.
Gun,
it's a fixed, you know, place gun emplacement.
Yeah, but you could do like a head spin and just like absolutely fountain everyone. Like the world's most sad slip and slide.
I call this one the Venetian.
Well, wow. I think that's a really interesting place to maybe stop.
100%. That is the best outro we're ever going to have. Matt, thank you so much for coming on. I'd like to say it's been a delight, but we'll let the listeners decide that one.
Thank God people don't read the group chat.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to go and find Matt anywhere on the internet, Matt, I'll let you do this bit. Where can people find you?
just at Matt Parker Bass on Insta, TikTok, yada yada, or mattparkerbass.com.
Fantastic. And Chris, my dear, if people want to, for some reason, go and follow you, where can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely beats me. But you can find me pretty much everywhere under That Guy on Bass. And please have a listen to my band, Darla. Nice and quick. Two sentence wow. plug.
Cheeky this plug.
Fantastic. Mate, it's got to be done. It's got to be done. We are funding things we cannot afford right now. It's got to be done.
One of us bought a Big Mac.
Right. I'm not even being funny. We're having those conversations at the moment. Being in a band is so hard.
Who gets the weekly Big Mac?
I'm serious. Like, we're planning stuff that involves travelling, and it's like, we're not going to be able to afford to, like, eat. This is awful.
Let's think about that later. Well, you're going to eat the bun on the Saturday, and I'll eat the burger, and then you can have the
exactly.
lettuce.
And then we'll play rock, paper, scissors for the gherkins. Loser eats the gherkins.
Oh, no. I used to hate gherkins in it until I became a man. And then I realised actually gherkins finessed it.
100%.
Dill pickle in a burger is...
I don't mind a gherkin in a burger. I'm not gonna have one separately. I love how that's the yardstick for, like, masculinity now.
Oh yeah, it's not like whether you think about the Roman Empire or exactly. whatever. It's whether you think. About gherkins.
We should send this to Andrew Tate.
Caesar, like, just covered in dill pickles is a real image for me.
Wow, is that a southern delicacy that?
Yeah, that's what we call it.
Real
that's what we have up here in Sheffield. We've got dill pickle.
That's the only Caesar salad I'm interested in.
All right, before this descends into further chaos, if you want to go and follow me, make sure you do so on YouTube, just / Johnny Dibble, and the same on Instagram as well, as my two favourite places to hang out. If you want to start up a chat or whatever, get in touch, just have a chat. Again, if you want to ask questions on this very podcast, head over to Instagram at In The Pocket Pod. We can do just that, like all the lovely people that have done so today. So thank you very much. One last bit of admin before we go. If you're listening to this on your podcast platform of choice, please leave it a 5-star review. It really helps. Something to do with algorithms, helps us reach more people. And what does more listeners mean, Chris?
Bigger guests
and more gherkins and burgers that we can afford. So thank you so much for everyone that's done so already. You lovely, lovely people. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Absolute chaos.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.